All right, today is January 9th, 2022, and right now there's no one in the room outside of Rabbi Wiener who's helping me. Yomo's at the Misrata Pnim, and people are frightened to leave their homes. That's what it amounts to. The government has evidently, if I understand correctly, raised their hands and said there's no way we can control what's happening, the spread of all the fourth round or seventh, fifth round. I can't even get that straight. But it's not a happy situation. And what I gather the government is trying to do is have what's called communal immunity. That there'll be 4 million people who were vaccinated, another 2 million people who were sick and recovered, and that way there'll be some communal herd immunity, I think is the word they use. All right, Nikavela Tov, but right now they're close to 200 people who are critically ill. I want to dedicate today's shiur to someone I basically did not know, and yet when I read about his death, it brought back so many memories. And I'm quoting to you from Yeshiva World News, Levaya of Harav Avraham Reznik, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the last of the Alta Mira. And the word, the term, the Alta Mira, I'll tell you how it came to be. The article really doesn't explain it. But when the Shanghai crowd reached America, probably was the same thing, those that went to Palestine, many of them, if not most of them, were not married. And Mir Yeshiva was famous that the Bachrim reached, and they were outer, they were older. They were already in their late 20s, early 30s, and no one was married. It was explained to me that in Europe it was such a difficult time financially that people didn't rush to get married. And generally speaking, the outer mirror, if they reached the age of marriage, they had to look for a rabbi's daughter, for a shtela they would inherit, and that's the way they got married. So they came to America. Rabbi Fishman Rechedich was married, but I remember many others weren't. I remember of Geshen Yankelevich. I still remember his wedding and the simcha, and there was Rabbi Avram Berkowitz. I write about him in Washington. Lo Aleinu wasn't married, and he died dancing on Simchas Torah. In Mir Yeshiva. He was already teaching at YU. He was my Rebbe for a few weeks, and Sukkos, the end of Sukkos, he did, and not married, nothing left. Okay, so Rabbi Avram Reznik, interestingly enough, did not go into Chinuch. He was a caterer in Flatbush, ran a catering business in Flatbush called Matamim Caterers for Panasa, and he told in learning in all the spare time he had. And, all right, this is a little bit different than the other mirror I knew, but when you say the Alta Mira and the last one, it's the end of a generation, and at my age, I'm seeing many ends to many different types of generations. Okay, Jack asked me about slavery in America, and did Jews have slaves? Yes, absolutely, Jews had slaves. There was a whole machloket. This has been written about, that there were rabbis who were totally against slavery, what we'd call today progressives, liberals, and there were other rabbis who wrote, we have slavery in the Torah. If we have slavery in the Torah, then what's wrong with having slavery in the United States? This literature, you can get to it. There was a Rabbi Einhorn. So I imagine if you go online and type in Rabbi Einhorn's Civil War, and it'll lead you to the Homachloket and other names one after another. As far as halachic literature, what was the status of these slaves with a Neved Kanani? They certainly weren't an Eved Ivri. I don't think they were Avodim Kananim. They were not Makabal Aleihem, Mitzvot Ki Isha, etc. There was no type of Gerut. But if anything is written on it, I have never seen a tshuva dealing with it. It doesn't mean there isn't, but certainly in the main tshuva, I don't recall anything. The main meshivim. Again, it could be if you work with Rabbi Einhorn and take it further, you'll come across perhaps tshuvot that were written, and it's an interesting topic. A book was written, that I know by, I believe it's a YU graduate, and he dealt with slavery and Yetziat Mitzrayim, and he compared the contemporary issues to our slavery in Egypt. It's a fascinating volume. I have it in my possession. I haven't looked at it in a number of years already. But fine, let's go further with Einhorn, and that should open up whatever's available. Coming back to Inyana Diyoma, and we can't, the world of tragedy, those of you that saw the weekend papers and the weekend Balonim, it haunts us. And I said avada, I told my children and my grandchildren, and I told them shul, and they all agree with me. I said it's interesting that the Meshi Zahav's episode did not create such a outpour of literature and correspondence and pro and con as the Walda story. And I think the reason is very simple. Meshi Zahav was always viewed as a bit of a quirk. And, you know, people said that that's what happens when someone goes from the Eder Haredit to becoming a religious Zionist, you wind up with a Meshi Zahav. Waldo was totally within. In other words, with Waldo, you're dealing with someone who was totally within the Haredi world and was lionized, and as I said last week, over 2 million copies of his book sold, and it really has created a maelstrom. I want to just state, and I thank Rabbi Grinstein, that I'm the happiest person alive when I say something and afterwards I'm told this was the Reb's position. And I'm quoting, he sent me a copy, Rabbi Aaron Ziegler, who I know very well, a fine Talmud Chacham, Yerei Shemayim. He's older than I am. And he's an uncle to Rabbi Aaron Adler, that helps you place him. He has put out a number of volumes, Halachic Positions of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. I'm quoting from volume 7 on page 29. And here the issue came up in modern times, and I related to it last week as well. Here they're quoting Rabbi Shalom, Rabbi Yosef Shalom Eliashiv, who said that before you go to the civil authorities, you should go to a rabbi. And that was said again in the Haredi world by some people. And I take, I totally 1,000% disagree. And here he quotes the Rav, who obviously didn't deal with Rav Eliashiv. Someone did venture out of his house. I am very proud. I'm proud to see you. The Rav didn't live when Rav Eliashiv became Rav Eliashiv, but the Rav totally disagreed. He had a different point of view. He said in the name of his father, Rav Meshe Soloveitchik, and this I heard from the Rav, that in democratic countries, the laws of Mesira simply do not apply. The determination of how reliable the accuser happens to be should be left in the hands of trained and professional law enforcement people and not the Rabbanim. And right on. Let me tell you that the Aruch HaShulchan essentially says the same thing, except he talks about the Tsar, the benevolent laws in Russia, Allah HaTamah V'Kamra in the Western world. But I stand on what I said, Rabbanim are not trained. I get questions occasionally. I just got one last week. I can't even talk about it because I don't want to mouth the words of the story. Sexual sickness. Oh my. God have mercy. And they turned to me, they were advised in America to turn to me. It has to deal with America and Israel. But I wrote back who to turn to. At least I know there are people who are experts in the field. And being a Talmud Chacham, which I hope I try to be, and knowing Shas and Paiskin doesn't yet make you an expert on every type of psychological, physiological pressure, sickness, illness in the world. So I'm happy to see that Mori Rebbe would have agreed with me halacha l'maisa. I have to tell you, in the contemporary scene, already within the Haredi world, there are some who have taken issue with the psak that you have to go to a rabbi, and they start to understand that you need an expert. And the issue I raised is also discussed widely over the weekend. How do you know the person is telling the truth? And of course, once you chayshish that she has an axe to grind, he has an axe to grind, it's a real problem. People are cruel, people are self-centered, people can do harm. But the way they train the experts, I know in the Mossad, Malk and I were trained. When we had to come back with reports, we had to tell them what was going on in the Refusnik community, what the Refusniks is thinking. And I remember Arye Kroll, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, the head of our department, my mafil, what's the word in English they use? In Hebrew it's mafil, operator, but there's a different word. Someone who operates a spy, what's the word in English? In Hebrew I know it, but in English...
Handler?
Handler. So my head, thank you. You see, Mark is involved with spies too over the years. He became rabbi, doctor, lieutenant colonel without being involved with some spies. So my handler taught us that when you get information, you compare it. And if information overlaps, even if part of it is not the same, the part that overlaps is going to be more honest, more correct. And you have to sort it out that way. If someone says something, no one confirms that it's dismiss it. But if you see there's some thought that overlaps, even if not the entire information overlaps, you got to be concerned with it. I'm sure that these people who are experts know how to deal with it. All right, anyway, halacha l'maisa, this incident is not going to leave us. And I see from the websites that his books were all translated into English, and they're not selling them, not in Israel, not in America today. And the murderer murdered himself and murdered that woman. The story of the lady who commits suicide afterwards breaks the heart. Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, what the Haredi press, Lashon Hara, what Lashon Hara, when Lashon Hara, someone's coming to kill you, to rape you, you scream and shout, that's Lashon Hara, and these are Talmidei Chachamim. It's beyond my comprehension, but I don't want to talk evil of great Rabbanim. Let's put it this way, I'm very happy with the chinuch I received and the Torah world in which I live and perpetuate. I'm extremely pleased. As someone from the Haredi world who I had impact on, a very famous family, said to me, Reb Aaron, you have truth. I said, Baruch Hashem, I had good Rebbeim. Okay, now we come to a very interesting topic, and we'll see. And it's not earth-shaking, but it's fascinating. And we'll pick it up afterwards. Chesky will Zach will come to the Rav. Will come to the Rav. But let's begin at the beginning. As I said last week, every unit in the army can have a Sefer Torah. As I told you, my dear student Rabbi Atlas, excellent individual, fabulous individual. What he's done with his life, Jordy, their two brothers. Jetty and Jordy. Jetty was my Talmud, Jordy I know too, but Jetty has been in the army for years in Miluim with a high rank, and he's responsible for relations with the diaspora. And I told you that he invented a portable shul. I saw it with my own eyes. It's unbelievable. But you can have a Torah with every last unit. The question is, where do you get a Bal Korei? In other words, you can have some people. I mean, I consider myself a Shemit Torah Mitzvah, but I'm not a Bal Korei, plain and simple. I have grandchildren, I have sons-in-law and grandchildren who are fabulous Balei Kriya, but that doesn't mean I am. So you can be in the army and need a Bal Korei. So I quoted to you from Hilchat Tzava, Harav Tzchaya ben Shlomo, who says that it's possible to have a Bal Korei. And he'll look into the Chumash, see the exact pronunciation, see the Trup, then he'll look into the Sefer Torah, and read it properly. As I explained to you, this is a very basic principle in Torah, the Gemara in Gittin that I quoted, Daf Samach, it's a whole sugya, the Ramsha b'chtav yatar v'shneim lomrim bal peh, Ramsha b'yapel v'shneim lekotvan. According to the original concept, it would mean that in order to get smicha, you would have to study 40 years with the Rebbe. Yes, we see from Shas that many of the Gedolei Israel studied 40 years. 40 years you mastered it. But time marches on, and unfortunately today, by the time you reach the age of 40, you're half done with life, or maybe even 60% done. And if my Rebbe said to me, my third year in MTA, Rebbe Yosef Weiss said to me, if you're not a Talmud Chacham by the age of 19, you'll never be. Today I would say to my Talmud, if you're not a Talmud Chacham by the age of 29, you'll never be. But in my days it was true. By 19, halavai, I would have the head today that I had when I was 19. Wow. I was bimei chupay, as Chazal say, harifut, in your youth. It's a euphemism for youth. It's harifut. So it wound up that we were forgetting everything, the Oral Torah. And you see the Gemara, eit lasot l'ashem hefeilu toratecha. All right, that's a very difficult principle to actually delineate, because if you're going to go with eit lasem chayfeidu tovetecha wholesale, we wipe away all of Judaism today, if you know what I'm saying. Women, what, you can't give a woman aliyah? I have women study with me, are cardiac experts, heart surgeons, top quality medical doctors, world famous international lawyers. One lady who studied in Hong Kong, she's married to BMT by Nebuch, he died already. And Hinkum was five times his. She was the leading, the vice president of one of the big banks in New York that dealt with mortgages and loans. And she was the final word. So what? You can have an aliyah and she can't? Eit lasot l'ashem heferu toratecha. I mean, I can go, this has been said. I'm not quoting anything that hasn't been said, unfortunately. All right, I can answer these, but it's not for now. But we have to understand there's a certain parameter in which we can say it, and obviously you can't change all of Yiddishkeit. But Chazal felt, as far as Torah learning, we could allow it to be written down. But as I said last week, it was written down in a very esoteric fashion, so that no matter how many volumes of Schottenstein you have and Steinsofst you have, you must have a Rebbe. And this I saw with Al-Basariya Chazenu, with the whole involvement in Russia. How did the Mossad get to me? Because what was happening in the Baal Tshuva movement, the Refusnik movement, they were in refusal, they lost their jobs, they were suffering. So they started learning, who are we? Why? What are we suffering for? And from Zionism, they came to religion. And religion, I have to tell you, they didn't end at religious Zionism. Due to a character named Rakefet, he got a good at Yisrael involved. And many of them went, they told me it's a growth, that Zionism, religion, religious Zionism, a good at Yisrael. Understand, some of them came out here. I don't elaborate, we'll leave it at that. Unfortunately, those people have the biggest problem with their children, because they came here and the kids have nothing to fight for, nothing to dream about. At least in Russia, they were fighting to leave. Here, if you're in the Tzionidati world, you don't have these problems, because I saw with my grandchildren, and I'm going to see it now with my great-grandchildren. A boy already from the age of 13 on is thinking, what am I going to do? Army. How am I going to do army? Am I going to do Hezda? Am I going to do a pre-army yeshiva? You know, there are many, and say, there's so much, and he's thinking about that. And a girl has to think, Sheirut Lumi, what am I going to do? What am I going to tribute? I have a great-grandson that his mother speaks to him now. He's all of 4 or 5 months old, sign language. And why sign language? Because Sheirut Lumi, she did sign language. At the wedding, she and her sister and some of the girls from Sheirut Lumi, they all sung with sign language. You follow? They did a whole thing, a whole play, a whole performance, because that's what they did, Sherit Lumi. So you see, these children don't have a problem, who am I, what am I? When you talk with them, you speak about Gemilat Chesed, oh boy, they're right there. But other kids are going, the army's no good, Hashem Chalila, you become this, this is no good, that is no good. So the kid, what does he have? And this is a real problem. Now, with the leyening, they saw they had to put it into print, but you still needed a Rebbe. And that's what happened in Russia. With Russia, they got to, we smuggled in guns. Again, I think I write in Washington, I told you the secret. How did we get Steinsaltz in? Imagine I'm going in with my Jewish nose and I'm going to try to bring in Steinsaltz. They took us apart. They practically stripped us naked. Point of entry, 1981, January. How do we get Steinsaltz in? So you see, Russia was in need of foreign currency. And from Finland, look at a map. Finland, the Bay of Finland, it's right across from St. Petersburg. So they used to run weekend whiskey tours. What was Pshat whiskey tours? These were from people from Finland, from the Scandinavian countries. No visa needed. You left on a boat Friday afternoon and you came back Sunday night in time to go to work Monday morning. And these people, they wined and dined them in whiskey and these shows. Let me not go further. If women were needed, etc. You understand what I'm saying? And among the people who went on these tours were Hasidei Umat Olam. See, this is why you can never teach hatred. They're always going to be good people. These were people who went for one purpose, to smuggle in Gemaras for the Jewish people. Could you imagine? And they had drop-offs. They would, we'd be told where to go in Leningrad and certain street, put it down next to this garbage can, and 2 minutes later, someone would appear and pick it up and walk away with it. And Sunday was an easy day because the KGB was working, not working. You know, it's their day, and half of them were drunk. You never saw a Sunday in Russia, what it was like, communist Russia. Drunks were all over the streets. So they got Gemaras, but it only started. It didn't quench their thirst. It just made them more thirsty. And the original words that Aryeh Kroll said to me, Harav Rakhefet, Anachli Yodim Shata Yodeya Ikhle Lameid Gemara, Atam Mukhan Li Lameid B'Moskava? And I said, yes. Mitikach Itcha. I said, my wife. Then he says to me, and what will you do with your three daughters? And he mentions each one by name. Boy, was I shaking. Then I realized this is the real McCoy. But okay, leave it at that. So the big problem, there's much more to talk about, but not for now. The big problem here is that if you're looking at the Chumash, maybe you'll continue reading, and you'll be reading from the Chumash, not from the Sefer Torah. And or you understand? Maybe you look at the Chumash and you pop up and just say the words, and you'll be reading Baal Peh. And this is the problem. Devarim shebichtav I ata rishoyim lomran ba'al peh. Now, Reb Moshe Feinstein dealt with this question. Afterwards we'll get to Reb Menashe Klein. And here you'll see, Jack, the tremendous difference between a Litvisha posek and a Hasidish posek. The Litvisha posek, and this is classic Litta, they paskin al pi svarim. They didn't go into all the achronim who dealt with the problem. No, they dealt, their mind captured everything. This is, the mind is what counts. And here you see Reb Moshe, the Chibas written, let me give you the source, Igrot Moshe, Orachayim Chelik Gimel, the third time he dealt with Orachayim. It's the volume that came out in 1973, Zach. And It's Orachaim Chalek Gimel, Siman Yud Tet. And it's written to someone named Eliakim Getzel Nussenbaum Shlita. The Tshuva is from 1968. And here it is. Ubedavah HaKoreh Shein Yodeh Baal Peh Tatamim. And he describes, he says, Baal Koreh doesn't know the trup. And he leaves the Chumash on the table next to the Torah. We've seen this a thousand times over. V'roeh b'chumash kol milah b'milah. He looks at the Chumash to see the printed word, every last word. And then he looks in the Sefer Torah and reads. Don't let him do this. Because Reb Moshe says that in this situation, can very easily be confused. He thinks he's reading it from the Torah, he's reading it from the Chumash. He's looking, he's going back and forth. How can you depend upon him? Ein lecha nichola sotkein, ki ein lahamino lezeh. And he says, you can't depend upon him. Bekal yacholit opezeh, sheye nidmalo shekorim ha-sefer Torah, ubeyemet korei b'sechirato b'ma sheroeh b'chumish. And he says, no, this is terrible, that he's going to look back and forth. Either he can really be reading from the Chumash, or he can, you know, he looked in the Chumash and he looks up and he remembers. Remember the example I gave you last week? I always love that example because remember when I used to use it in Mechon Gold, the girls in Michalav, Mechon Gold, they loved it. They used to laugh. I said, your boyfriend wants to impress you. It's a fabulous Baal Koreh. He wants to show you, you know, it's the Torah by heart. So he's going to lay in and look at you in the ladies section, look back. And you're going to look at him and have not gotten the whole laying is worthless because the Ram Shev B'chav, Yat Vashem Lo Mabal Peh. And Reb Moshe says, don't allow this. V'yote tov l'shmo b'Baal Koreh. And he says, it's much better to have a Baal Koreh who doesn't know the trap, but at least he can read the words. Most of us, I would imagine, and anyone at our level of learning, in a kollel already, 90% of us can read the Chumash, you know, the Forever Sefer Torah. We may make a mistake occasionally, but you'll have someone stand up there, correct you if you mispronounce it. All right? You don't know the trap, but at least have someone who knows how to read the words. Ubidvarat sheyapsik hapsukim kara'ui. That he says, what's most important when you read, you have to end the psukim where they end. Kol pasuk shelo pasik Moshe, nan lo paskin. It's a basic klal. And that's why with Kiddush, when you tell me to talk to me, everyone begins vayera vayivoka. Many people say you can't begin there. It's the middle of a pasuk. So you have to say the whole pasuk. But we, a minigah, my minigah is, which I saw from Gedolei Yisrael, is to say the first part of the pasuk quietly. You know, you say it like quietly under your breath, and then vayera vayivoka. But someone has to know how the pasuk ends and end properly. That's more important than anything. And Reb Moshe says, even lachatchila v'kein tov lahachmir bi'etnachta im efshah. And he says it would be good if you even knew an etnachta. It's like a comma. I'll put it that way. Those of you who are Baalei Koreah know what I'm saying. It's like you're supposed to pause. A good Baal Koreh reads half the pasuk, the etnachta, pauses for a second. It's like Elilim, you know, after Elilim, Vashem, you pause. But that's only lachatchila. B'dieved, pausing at the end of the sentence is much more important. And Reb Moshe says it would be great if you could have someone standing there looking in the Chumash and he'll signal the Baal Koreh. I don't know, you can work out a signal. This means the end of the pasuk and this means etnachta, like a small comma, period. All right? can be worked out. Now notice, Reb Moshe, first of all, gives no sources whatsoever. Just the Sfarim. It's not the first place. If you're familiar with a Reuven, Natan Hank, have you ever gone into the issue of a Reuven? I mean, Reb Moshe has chumras there that are his own, from his own Sfarim, you know, with putting the 12 meal. If it goes and covers the side with Brooklyn, you pull in, you have, all right, 600,000 people on the streets. But this is Reb Moshe. It was a tremendous chiddush, his own. Svara, thinking, didn't have sources, basically. Took Midrashim, you know, the Yud Bet Mil, and put it lahalacha. But that's Reb Moshe. Had a Litvisha approach, a Svara. Then here, mamish, no sources whatsoever, and as far as, all right, we're all humans. We can't deny what Reb Moshe said can be true, but lo nitnat Torah lemalachei hasharet, you know, b'diavad, you have no one to lay in. All right, he's willing to lay in. He knows Trump, but he doesn't know what Baal Peh, wants to look in the Chumash. Can we allow it according to Reb Moshe? Absolutely not. Get someone who can read the words at least, and that would be infinitely better. Okay, that's Reb Moshe. As far as just reading the words, we'll come back to that, but later today. All right, that's Reb Moshe. Reb Menashe Klein is hysterical. Mishnah Halachot. Chelik Zayin, Siman Yud Chet. Now, Zayin, Siman Yud Chet. And before I go further, I just want to quote one part of the Tshuva that reflects something that only Reb Menashe Klein or someone with Hasidic background would write. Reb Menashe Klein, one sentence. V'gam ra'inu etzel tzadikim shenahagu likro bi'ofen zeh. How does Reb Menashe paskin what he paskins? We've seen tzadikim, he says. This is the way they read. And here you're coming into a whole world of chassidut. Have you ever davened in a shtibl? There's shtiblach today all over the world. Some shtiblach, the rabbi or the rebbe will always get shishi every week. Chok v'lo ya'ava. You can't fight with them. Limit aliyah, the Rebbe Hashishi. Some shtiblach, the Rebbe Leyans. I'll show you an unbelievable drop of information that came my way after last week. The Rebbe Leyans, not every Rebbe is a big Baal Korah. Not every Rebbe knows Chumash. Not every Rebbe, some of them, you know, live in a world where they take luxuries upon themselves. They don't have to prepare. They don't have time. So they lay in. How do they lay in? Looking into a chumash and then looking at the Sefer Torah. And you go on and on. I can tell you that what I'm telling you happened to me. For over 20 years, every summer, I would be in America. And I always rented an apartment in Borough Park. And I, Baruch Hashem, very happy to be where I was. And Borough Park was a fabulous location for what I had to do. And to live as a Jew, it was a fabulous location, minyanim whenever you wanted. So I davened in a shtibl that was not the closest to my house. Closest was around the corner, but the shtibl was a block and a half away. Nachlat Moshe, if you know what I'm talking about. 20th Avenue, I think it was. And a very wonderful shtibl, named after Reb Moshe Big. I think I told you more than once that I had tremendous yichus in the shtibbel. Number one, I had talmidim who listened to the shayurim. Number two, I was the only one there without a beard. And number three, I was the only one who knew Reb Moshe Bick personally. It's his grandson is the Rav there. And then they're laning Monday, Thursday, and they call up Yisrael, Bimkom Kohen, some important balabas, this, that, and a kid walks in it, and he yells, I'm a Kohen. And they tell the kid, shut your mouth. I was so upset, you have no idea. So I opened my mouth. Generally, I don't like to open my mouth, but it's not my shoe, not my responsibility, but this was... Anyone who's a Talmud of the Rav knows what I'm saying, because the Rav had gehalten as Kriyas HaTorah is upgebeut, that Kriyas HaTorah is predicated upon a Kohen Levi of Yisrael. And the minyan which I daven at for 50 plus years every morning, they don't play any shtick, because I told them decades ago, myself and Sam Dershowitz, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, we told them, you don't send the Kohen out. This is Lachatchila, Kohen Levi Yisrael. And Baruch Hashem, until today, they listen to me. But, so I protested. They told me, Lord, das geht on. Well, let me speak English. This goes on in all the shtivlach. And they told me it's a tshuva of the Minchat Laza. And sure enough, I looked up, I cited in class, here's a guy, I had to let off steam. I couldn't believe my eyes. The Minchat Laza, that the shul belongs to the Rebbe. And once the shul belongs to the Rebbe, he can determine who's entitled to Aliyah. Then there's a klal that a Talmud Chacham, you know, originally he came from Rebbe Avadya Yosef, used to take the first Aliyah. Wow, 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 in the Hasidic world. But I have to say, to the credit of Nachlat Moshe, evidently what I said bothered them. And you know, with all due respect to the Minchat Laza, Klal Yisrael today is called... From that point on, they didn't drive the Kohen, told the Kohen, shut your mouth. And he was sitting there, sitting there. They didn't chase him out. Shut your mouth. This was our Nohag, our Minhag. So, you see, Rav Menashe Klein is hysterical. I saw this by Rebbeim, by Tzaddikim, by Chassidei Elyon. And you're going to come along and say it's forbidden? Okay? Now, this proof that I saw by Tzaddikim, this is only in a Chassidish tshuva, so in a Chassidish background. There is a concept of when there's a machlekes apoiskim, okay, fukhazi, enochinami. There is a concept, ma'asa avot, that if we saw Gedolei Yisrael, but stam, I saw tzaddikim, who, when, where, names, tell us what you're talking about. And this is what they said, and therefore Reb Moshe can absolutely not be correct. And he quotes, the tshuva, by the way, here is written in 1973, it's written to someone named Menachem Zev Schick, Harav HaGoyim Chulu. Now, the name Schick right away brings to mind the Maram Schick. He was a Talmud Mufak of the Chatam Sofer. May have been his most famous Talmud. His Tshuva quoted and requoted. Generally speaking, anyone with the name Schick comes from this family. In America, remember in Queens, there was the Schick Bakery. That's they're in catering today. I think it's, I don't know, but I remember in my time, they were bakery, they were catering, they were descendants of the Maram Schick. And generally speaking, anyone with that name, I believe over the years I also taught the Schicks in Michlalan, and they were Einiklach, they were from the family. And that's who he's writing to. And it was interesting to know what his background is, but... He writes to him that he says, you showed me the tshuva of Reb Moshe Feinstein, and he quotes the tshuva we just quoted, Shepasak b'bal korei, she'ena yodea b'alpeta tamim, roa b'chumish, and Reb Moshe asses, and the Maram Schick is, not the Maram Schick, Reb Menashe Klein, very, very upset. And he says, you showed it to me. Now we have to ask a question. Why did this person show that shiva of Reb Moshe to Reb Menashe Klein? What does this have to do with Reb Menashe Klein? Suddenly, Mapidom, Manin Shmit Eitzel HaSinai, went over to him and said, Rebbe, again, I'm living it in Yiddish, but Vash Nemakuk, Reb Moshe, Vash Paskin, what are Paskins? What are you doing? All right, I was bothered by this question, and I have to tell you, I have an absolute source. Someone listening to the shirim, I don't believe ever met him personally, named Meir Apfeldorf, sent me an email, and he writes that he's a Talmud of Reb Menashe Klein. He insisted on learning the Torah each Shabbat in Borough Park. I don't know why he never prepared or didn't memorize, but he had an open chumash and kept looking and then laying. I don't recall that he had the trep correct, but his Hungarian pronunciation was traditional. In other words, the word who becomes he, kiddushani, kiddushanu, kiddushani, as was his tuneless trep. Well, here you have the whole story. This Meir Apfeldorf davened in the shtibel in Borough Park, or the Ungavar shtibel. I told you, it's a very unique building. It's on the corner. On one side of the building, on the outside, is Kever Rachel. On the other side is the Kotel. In other words, some Jews in Borough Park think they're mamish in Yerushalayim, Beit Lechem. But I have to say, I have to give credit to Rav Menashe Klein. He opened the shul here in Ramat, where his son is Rav today. And that shul, it's a beautiful shul, was built by Eli Wiesel. I told you, when he got the Nobel Prize, he gave, if not the whole amount, half the amount to his chaver from the death camps, and afterwards in Paris to Rav Menashe Klein, who was Eli Wiesel's rabbi. He always turned to him when he needed rabbinical advice. And they built a branch of the Borough Park shul in Ramat. There's one son in Borough Park today and one son in Ramat. But now you can understand it, that he saw every Shabbat what Reb Menashe Klein is doing, looking in the Chumash and then laying, looking in the Chumash and then laying. And suddenly he's learning Reb Moshe, he's Reb Moshe Asses, and Asses B'Shefa. In other words, not that there's any doubt about it, Reb Moshe. And he tells Reb Menashe Klein, look what you do, Reb Moshe totally Asses. And therefore, you can understand why Reb Menashe Klein says right away in the first or second, let's see, the first paragraph, he says right away, how can it be Asa if Tzadikim did this? I saw this in Munkach, I saw this in Ungva, I saw it in the earlier generations, and Tzadikim did it. How can you Asa? And then he goes in, very interesting. I don't know if it's entirely applicable here, but he makes a case against Reb Moshe. How do you assume people are doing the wrong thing? And this takes us back, Eid Echad Ne'eman B'Isurim. That we believe, you know, and it's not on a simple level, even on a more complex level. What do I mean by that? On a simple level, I come into Elliot's house. Elliot serves me food. How do I know it's kosher? But if Elliot is serving the food, if his wife is serving the food, we know it's kosher. Even if you come into a room, now let's do it a little differently. There are airline food there. One package is treif, one package is kosher. The Eid Echad says to you, this is the kosher one. You can eat it. Eid Echad, right or wrong. All right, this we're mocked, anything on airlines, you have to have double seals, etc. But that's because Gentiles are handling it. But if it would be a Jewish person, you wouldn't need any seals. He's the Shema Mitzvah. He says, this is kosher. This is kosher. And we totally believe him. And Reb Menashe Klein says, if this is the case, why don't we believe the Baal Koreh? There's no reason in the world not to believe him. And if the Baal Koreh is a Talmud Chacham and he knows the Halacha and he knows that he shouldn't say it Baal Peh, and he tells you, I'm looking into the Chumash but I'm repeating it from the Sefer Torah, he has a Cheskat Ne'amanet. Why are you questioning him? And Reb Moshe comes up with reasons that Bekalut, he can make a mistake, therefore we shouldn't believe him. And he says, Lefi ani v'dati l'achav bakashat slichato shel hagon shlita, I ask Reb Moshe to forgive me. But why do we assume people make mistakes? Eid echad ne'eman be'isurim. And Reb Menashe Klein says, this is wonderful. And he says, even Reb Moshe's Eitza, that you have someone standing there and reading from the Chumash for him, you can have much more mistakes. People in the shul are listening. Who are they listening? Suddenly, you're concentrating. You hear the voice of the person reading the Chumash. That's the one you're paying attention to. And I have to tell you, this I've seen time and again, and I'll tell you where. Birchat Kahanim. Birchat Kahanim, the Baal Tefillah, has to lower his voice. V'rechacha, v'endacha, yivarechacha. You have many Baalei Tefillah, yivarechacha, and the poor Kohen, yivarechacha. Who are you listening to? Natan, right or wrong? Right or wrong? I have to tell you, I don't want to take sides, but Reb Menashe Klein, it's a walk-off here. You follow me? This is a walk-off. You know what I'm talking about, baseball. A walk-off. A guy hits a home run. You know, in the old days, when a player for sake of honor was on first, and a guy hit a home run, the player on first, the minute he touched home plate, the game was over. The player who hit the home run didn't get credit for home run. This just came to light in Babe Ruth. It's 100 years or whatever. They're celebrating that he did great things for the Yankees. What's going on? Because there's no baseball now. It's a lockout. So they got him something to publish. So Babe Ruth, Baruch Hashem, Devu Mechaye HaMeitim. And it turns out that he had some home runs that he didn't get credit for because they were walk-off hits. But there were some home runs he had that he wouldn't get credit today. You know what I'm talking about? That's right. If he hits it, the ball bounces in and one hop into the grandstands, it was a home run then. Today it's a double, a ground rule double. So don't start questioning the 714 that the Babe hit. But it's very possible. What I'm saying is, Reb Menashe Klein is right. The Baal Koreh is going to tell him, and here, this is an etnachta, this is a self-pasuk, and I'm always bothered by that, because many times you're only a human being. You hear the chazan, yivarechacha, and the kohen, you can barely hear him, you're not paying attention. All right, birchat kohanim is not kriyas hatorah, it's not that mendaf yotze zayin in the same sense, but nevertheless, Reb Menashe Klein is right. Okay. And he's very, very strong here. And he says, all right. Then he refers, and this too, he criticizes Reb Moshe. Why doesn't he refer to the sources? And here, Reb Menashe Klein, give you the source. Like anything else, you can check it backwards and come up with enough sources for 100 hours of Sheyurim. But let us deal with the Shulchan Aruch. Orechayim, Siman Kuf Mem that the Yishuv and Sifkatan Bet, Kufmen Bet, Sifkatan Bet, Orechayim, the Yishuv Sheyeshem Minyan, the Ein Mi Sheyodea Likro Batorah. Yishuv, this is a perfect example of what we're talking about. Gehilchata, Bidikduk, Uvetamim, Afilu Hachi, Yikru Betorah, Bivracha, Kahilchata. All right, now this is a very interesting question. You have a yishuv where simply no one knows how to read properly. Forget about the trup. Just the reading. No one knows. No one's on a level. I don't know. We may have that generation as a result of Corona, if you know what's going on with the... I'm not worried about the whole world, but the Israeli schools, my great-grandchildren, one day they have school, one day they don't have school, they have to be home. And it's a trap. You know, we're caught up in something beyond us, and no one yet has opened their mouth that we have to do tshuva and accept the Sheva Mitzvot, and accept the fact that we're humans and B'Tzelem Elokim, and we have to follow the divine command. No one has said that. No one has said that. Men marry men, women marry women, and I could be arrested in New York for speaking out against same-sex marriages. I've told you more than once, I still shiver and shake that in a frum day school, they told the teachers not to speak out against same-sex marriages. It will create problems with the school, for the local, with the local authorities. It's beyond comprehension. You all know why the Mabul began. I don't have to elaborate. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Midrashim, etc. So you have a community where no one knows how to read properly. Should you read from the Torah? Can you make bracha? I want you to know this is the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. Halacha l'maisa, the Achronim don't accept it. And I'll tell you what the theory is. Very simple. The whole concept of reading Torah, where does it go back to? It goes back to the Gemara in Baba Kama. I believe it's Daf Pei Bet. And the Gemara, and you can look into Hilchot Kriyat HaTorah, you look into the Rambam. It's the eldest takana there is. Holchu, Shloshit, it's next week's Sedra, it's this week's Sedra. B'Shalach. You all know B'Shalach. All right, B'Shalach, Az Yeshua Moshe, and then Miriam. By the way, that shows you that from the dawn of our community, we worship separately. The men worship first, and then the women. It's Komish, it's Sukkim, staring you in the eye. And then what we went through, Kriyat Yamsuf, 10 commandments, the 10 plagues, Kriyat Yamsuf, Maisa Nisa Mashara Ra'ata Shivchal Hayam Ra'ay Cheskel B'Ches Yonotchna. I'm quoting the Tanchuma. Rashi quotes it a little differently, but there are more sources. It's unbelievable. And 3 days later, they're yelling and shouting, no water, no meat. Ribbono Shel Olam, you see such achievements. How can you come down to earth and start complaining that you didn't have candy bars? I mean, it's unbelievable. So Chazal say, we see from this that if you don't learn Torah, nilu, that's the word the Gemara uses. And a lot is being said, a lot, the Dashanim and the Rav, Mori Rebbe. What does nilu mean? It means a spiritual death. You feel spiritually moribund. That's the word I would use in English. And Chazal mitaken that you shouldn't go 3 days without Kriyas HaTorah. And this is why we read the Torah Shabbos, Monday, Thursday. Chok v'lo ya'avar. Shabbos afternoons for a different name, Yoshoi Koronat, but 3 days spiritually. Wake up. No? Does that mean you have to have a Sefer Torah? Of course, lachatchila. There's a whole concept of kriya and brachot and how many psukim you read and what Moshe was metakein and what Ezra was metakein. I advise you to look into Sheyurim L'Zeicha Mori Rebbe, one of the most famous Yartzeit Shurim the Rebbe gave, and it's written up in Shurim L'Zeicha Mori Rebbe. You'll see the whole shir is on kriyas hatayrav Rav. One of the topics that the Rav was head and shoulders above anyone who ever lived was Kriyas HaTorah. He was machadish there time after time after time. I had the schut of learning Hilchot Kriyas HaTorah with the Rav with it. 60, 61, we learned parts of Orach Chaim, parts, because that year we learned Challah. We learned what the Rav wanted to sharpen up his mind on Challah. We learned Orach Chaim with some parts. Ach, what a year, what a year, what an experience. Anyway, lachatchila, of course, b'diavad, you still want the person to learn. All right. If you have no one to lay in, simply read the Pasha. So, all right, that everyone agrees. The question of making brachot, how can you make brachot if the original Avtakaners were the Sefer Torah, with the real Kriya? All right, that's the way we pass from the halacha. If you don't have a Sefer Torah, einachinami, read the Pasha, do what you can. I can only tell you, during Corona, I never missed the Shabbos davening in my life. Baruch Hashem. But then I was good and ill, and there was a lockdown, and there was no shul, but it didn't mean I'm not mavesedri. You learn, you read in Shabbos morning, you ke'ilu. But you don't make brachot. But here you see in the psak of the Shulchan Aruch that even where you don't have a real Baal Koreh and no one can read, forget about the Tamim, forget about that, he can't even read the words without the Nikud. So you help him read the words and do whatever you can and you make brachot, kech batora bebracha kechilchata. That and look and this tremendous machloket, because how do you make the brachot? There's not a real kriya, but all right, the etzim katana, the basic of the takana, is sholyel yelchush l'shayamim, and you shouldn't have spiritual depression. You shouldn't be despondent spiritually, even to make a bracha. The Mishnah Berurah says already, Yikru b'torah v'bracha b'li nigun hata'amim. And the Mishnah Berurah says, yes, you can make a bracha, but only if you read it properly. Tamim will wave, that's a luxury, but the kriya has to be proper. That's what he's quoting Achronim. And he quotes later, the primi gadim, he doesn't agree with this. And once someone is reading and he's not an expert, we always are afraid he's not going to read properly. And he gives examples, she bimkom chelev, Korei Chalav, on Bimkom Zecha, he'll read Zacha. And you all know these are tremendous differences. Zecha, Zacha, Chalav becomes Chalav. And the Prima Gadam says, and there's no one there to correct him. You can't make a bracha. Read, yes. Your Yotzei, at least the basic concept of the Takana Shelo Yehul Gimel Yamim B'li Limud Torah, but Chas V'Chalila, you can't make a bracha because there can be endless mistakes. And that's a tremendous machloket haposkim. L'chatchila, just reading, no trouble, as long as you can read from the Sefer Torah properly. Everyone hold, and I shouldn't say everyone, but But we would paskin la halacha, you can make a bracha. But the prima gadim, if there aren't experts there who know how to read, no. And then the Mishnah Berurah says, and here I don't know why Reb Moshe didn't cite this, because it's totally against Reb Moshe. The Mishnah Berurah paskins in Sifkat and Chet in the Mishnah Berurah. What I quoted before was from Sifkat and Zion. The Yim Yesha Misha Yodea Koponim Lekroha Tamim Mitocha Chumish Yikraze Mitocha Chumish Lifneha Isha Korebe Sefer Torah Lahorot Haderech Benekudot Vetamim Karui Vakore Mitocha Chumish Lo Yikra Bekoram Rak Kedei Sheyechenish Mala Hakore Mitocha Sefer Torah. In other words, there you have an Eitzah, let someone stand near the Baal Korei and read in for him, ahead of him, with the trap, and do it with a low voice so the people will hear the Baal Korei and they will not hear from the Gabbai or the Shamis who is helping him. And Reb Moshe doesn't deal with all this. He just paskins la halacha that we're not somach on the human being. He'll look in the chumash, and that's what he'll say. And he'll say it aloud, and he won't read it from the Sefer Torah, and it'll be the varim shebechtavi atar shem lam rambal peh. And Reb Moshe says, Reb Menashe Klein says many different dates up, quotes the Shulchan Aruch, quotes the Mishnah Berurah, quotes the Hasidim that he saw with his own eyes, the Tzaddikim, how they lay him like he does in Borough Park, and what a difference of opinion between Reb Menashe Klein and between Reb Moshe. And he says at the end of the tshuva, hold on 1 second, that he says, it's Pella Be'emet Al Hagoyin Reb Moshe Feinstein who didn't cite all this, and there's so many different solutions that either my method of looking in to the Chumash and then the Baal Korei looks into the Sefer Torah, or he's listening to the Gabbai who leads him. There's so many different methods that I am surprised that Reb Moshe didn't cite this. Okay, this is the Machlokes. Halacha Lamaisa, we obviously paskin like Reb Menashe Klein, the Shulchan Aruch, the sources would seem to indicate that Reb Menashe Klein is correct.
I've heard expression, yeah. Four-laning, like there's an expression.
Yeah, four-laning. That's exactly what the Mishnah Berurah suggests when you have a problem like this. Now, all this is very wonderful. The Rav used to boast occasionally. What is Pshat? He used to boast. This was, as far as I'm concerned, the greatest boast I ever heard from the Rav. And he repeated it a number of times. I heard it many times. I'm sure over the decades, he repeated it hundreds and hundreds of times. And you could see it really motivated him. Mark, where would you say is the most important place you ever got an aliyah, or you ever got maftir, and you had to read? Most important place. How would you feel if on one side of the Amid was standing Reb Chaim Briska, and the other side was Reb Simcha Zelig Riga? Natan, do you know who Reb Simcha Zelek was? Oh my. How many years have you studied in YU? How many years? Just three? What, you just smicha? You came in after college?
Yeah.
Ah, so, Zach, have you heard of Rav Simcha Zelek Riga? How many years in YU? How many? 5 years. I studied there. Wow, I'm still studying there. Gentlemen, YU gets a zero if a Talmud can study there 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and not have heard of Rav Simcha Zelek Riga. It also shows me you have never studied a guy named Aaron Rakefitz. 2 volumes on the Rav. Have you ever held them in your hands? What do you say, Natan?
Not yet.
Not yet. You try and buy it today. Ay, God. I was robbed, by the way, these volumes, when Ketav always paid me royalties. Ugh, honest. Then they sold off to Urim in Israel. I haven't received royalties, and it was selling. They came up with a cheap edition. And they know, they take advantage. When I mentioned this in America, 50 rabbis ran out, sue them, you don't know what they did to this one, that one, the other one. They know, a jerk like me, I'm going to take time to sue them. Come out of my idiot for a few $1,000, fight with them. And by the way, I have 3 lawyers in my family. My famous daughter, who's only first to end it, also she's a Hebrew lawyer, which came afterwards. And I have 2 granddaughters-in-law, lawyers. Top quality lawyers. But that's the world. That's the world. The meek shall inherit the earth. And what do they say? That's all the meek deserve. All right. Sometimes the earth tastes good if you put in a little salt and pepper. Eliot, open up the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, volume 1. And I'm quoting from page 204. 204, it's 4 pages I'm quoting from. Related by the Rav in his annual Yahrzeitstag in memory of his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, given at Yeshiva University, January 18th, 1972. You know what they're talking about, the Yahrzeitstag? You've read about that, you've heard about that. The highest, the biggest day of Lumdus in America, all of America. They used to sneak in from Lakewood and Chaim Berlin and Tera Vidas. I mean, they covered their faces. No one should identify them. But unfortunately, we thought it would last forever. It was the outside of Rav Moshe. And the Rav would, I don't know how he had the energy. I had a Talmudist said to me, he's looking at me on the screen now, he said to me, Shabbos, I could listen to you all day, Rev. He was my Talmud in BMT in your time, and now he lives in England, comes here, half and half. Anyway, I said, yeah, you could listen all day, but I don't have the energy. B'nai Shalalem, the Rev could go on 4.5 hours. It was unbelievable. Halacha, akata. You can't imagine. I describe it. Open up the Rev and see what I have to say there. Now, so at the Yahrzeitstag, I'm now quoting the Rav, except I have to be honest with you, he said it in Yiddish, I translated it. By the way, in my work on the Rav, I tell you always, here it says Yiddish, that means I translated it. Everything in English, or if it's in Hebrew or Yiddish, I tell you, so the translation, if it's faulty, blame me, don't blame the Rav. I will tell you a study which I remember well. It was the last year of Chaim's life, and he was still in Minsk. And I put in parentheses, because Natan, I was worried you won't understand what Rav Chaim was doing in Minsk, where he had moved from Brisk to escape the battlefront of World War I. Close the parentheses. He was soon to leave for Warsaw, and then Otwock. Otwock was a suburb of Warsaw. It was a health resort there, where he died. We visited Rav Chaim in Minsk. What did we visit? The Rav, his father, his mother. I was still a youngster. It was Pashas Lech Lecha. This took place October 27th, 1917. We're going back now 105 years. And they honored me with maftia. The regular Baal Korei was Reb Simcha Zelig Rieger. Simcha Zelig Rieger was Brisket Dayan. Have you studied Rakefet's work? Doesn't Rakefet tell you also, quoting the Rav, when they came to the Reb Chaim, as them gefragt a shayla, they asked the question of Reb Chaim, what did Reb Chaim say? Ich ken ich pasken in geyen freg der Riege, der de briske dayen rabbi. I don't pasken, I don't know how to pasken. And didn't I tell you the story that the Reb tells about his father, that they came to his father, Reb Moshe, and his father says, ich pasken ich goet. And Reb Moshe, Reb Chaim grabbed his son Reb Moshe and said to him, when I tell people I don't know how to pasken, no one believes me. But when you tell people you don't have to paskin, they're going to believe you. You better learn how to paskin. Don't send them to the brisket diet. So they called her up, the regular Malkaris, the Simcha Zelig Rieger. He was an extraordinary Balkore and never made any mistakes in the trup. Reb Chaim came over to me and said, quote, whether you sing it with a nice tune is immaterial, but you must be punctilious about the trup. It is the opinion of the Rambam that one must repeat the words if he makes a mistake in the trup. Gentlemen, look into Hilchot Tefillah, Perek Yud Bet, Halacha Vav in the Rambam. And I have a footnote here. The Rambam's viewpoint is more stringent than the Ramaz. See the Ramaz gloss, the Shulchan Aruch HaRechayim 142.1. You follow? That Reb Chaim, that's what I alluded to before, that even though I showed you the Mishnah Brura, and everyone is, and even Reb Moshe, and certainly Reb Menashe Klein would be mekil if you make a mistake in the trup, not the Rambam. So Reb Chaim told his grandson, be careful. I don't care if you have a good son or not, but say the trup properly. And the Reb says, I have no choice. They already called me up. Reb Chaim was standing on one side of the bima, following my reading of the Torah from his Chumash text. And Reb Simcha Zelig stood on the other side. Neither of them caught me making any mistakes. How do I know? Because they did not require me to repeat any word or trup. New Elliot, did you ever get called up and have Reb Chaim on one side, Reb Simcha Zelig on the other side? And boy, the Rav was so proud. And I'll give you another source in a second, but let me just go a drop further with the Rav here, with Kriyas HaTorah. I relived this. This was a dream world for me. You know, the Rav brought to life Shlomele, Brisk and Litter. You were there. You were there. When you see it in my work on the Rav, the volume and a half is just quoting him, and. In general, I heard from my father that Reb Chaim was unusually stringent in relation to hearing the Torah reading on the designated days. When traveling, he would get off the train in a community where he knew he could hear the Torah reading. You follow? Monday, Thursday, he got off the train. No, so one second. Zach is saying to himself, what's the big deal getting off the train? We'll get the next train. The Rav knew what you were saying. In those days in Russia, it meant a wait of 24 hours until the next train to your destination. At times, he actually carried a Torah scroll with him and organized the minyan on the train so he could hear the reading of the Torah. And here the Rav says, it's Alam Olgeven Lebedik. It was always lively about Reb Chaim and his efforts to hear the Torah reading on Monday and Thursday. And that's Reb Chaim, that's the Rav. And you should know in YU, we had the same story. The Rav would fly in, later he would fly in Tuesday morning and fly out Wednesday afternoon. I still remember in the early 50s, the Rebbetzin, Dr. Tanya, would drive. They would drive in. The Rebbe had a black Dodge, and he drove, got a license, and the first time he drove, he smacked around, and the Balabatan, you don't know the story, the Balabatan went to him, Rebbe, you're precious to us. You're the chief rabbi. We all look up to you. And they said, we have two complaints. One, driving is not for you. That's for people who don't think about a Rambam and arrive at when they're driving. Two, you wear these simple hats that you're the Rebbe. So the Rebbe said, about your, the second reason, your second complaint, it's no complaint. Reb Chaim dressed like a simple balabas. No fancy rabbinic clothes. I can wear whatever hat I want. For your first complaint, you're right, I will not drive again. His Rebbetzin used to drive. And they say about Reb Lazer Silver, he drove, and every time he banged up the car, and he would say, no, it's only a fender. It's only fenders I'm banging up, not the car. So the Rav, one second, when it came to Boston and the relationship, and it was unbelievable. But anyway, in August 27th, 1975, what happened in Boston was, I have to be very brief, after the Rebbetzin died, the Rav suffered. He was all alone, and his Rebbetzin was everything to him. And Kolzman, he went to the yeshiva. Oh, I know what I was talking about before. I'll come back to it in a second. Kolzman, he went to the yeshiva. He had what to do. So they organized, during the summer, Yache Kalar in Boston, that the yeshiva boys could come up. Mrs. Feuerstein arranged everything. And they had where to live, and they had food, all centered around Maimonides, and they studied during the summer with the Rav. At the end, they'd be Yachei Kala with the Rabbinical Council of America, so it kept the Rav occupied. And what I was talking about with the driving was the Rav would drive in, they would leave Boston early on Monday morning. And in those days, the Rav didn't daven with the minyan. The minyan was too late for him. They would leave before the traffic, whatever, and got to New York. It was a long drive. And he would come into the Beis Medrash. Who didn't hear Kriyas HaTorah today? And they would make a minyan for Mincha. Occasionally, he would have to fly in on Monday or go back Thursday. But when he would fly in on Monday, there was a whatever, there were reasons he had to alter the schedule, a wedding, a public talk, Boston, New York, Mizrahi convention. So if he missed Kriyas HaTorah, he would always ask, who didn't hear Kriyas HaTorah? And they would make a minyan for Mincha, and before Mincha they would read Kriyas HaTorah. And evidently the Rav held that it's not a halacha, that it must be Torah read b'shachrit, it has to be read Monday or Thursday. And the same takana would apply, if you missed the morning, you could read it later during the day. Now, at the Yachei Kala in Boston, and the Yachei Kala, I have to tell you, that came at the end of the summer, and it was 3 days. The Rav, the RCA would come up, many of the Rabbanim, it was a real event, and they would sit in the lawn when the weather was nice, the shiur would be on the lawn of Maimonides. Otherwise, it'd be indoors. And they would come up for the sake of argument on Tuesday. The first shiur would be Tuesday afternoon. Wednesday, there would be a shiur Wednesday morning and Wednesday afternoon. And Thursday, there'd be a shiur Thursday morning. And then the Rabbanim would go back to being their shuls for Shabbat. So this is now, and I'm quoting to you word by word, is the Yachei Kala in Boston, August 27th, 1975, but this is the Rav's English, it's not mine. He didn't say that the Yachei Kala were in English, not in Yiddish. I remember when I was a young boy, I visited Reb Chaim when he was in Minsk. It was about 1917. On my visit, they gave me the honor of calling me up for Maftir. Reb Chaim came over to me and said to me, whether you sing it with a nice tune is immaterial. but you must be punctilious about the cantillation, the trump, and not only the pronunciation of the words. This was in accordance with Maimonides' view that a mistake must be repeated correctly, even when it is only a mistake in the trump. It is this way that Reb Chaim understood the Rambam's ruling. I gave you the source before. Reb Chaim held that you had to repeat when reading from the Torah, even only if misvocalized or pronounced the word badly. But even not, Reb Chaim held not only, but even if a mistake was made in the trup, when it was at the bima, Reb Chaim stood at my right side. Reb Simcha Zelav Beitin of Brisk, who was Reb Chaim's balkore, stood at my left side. I recited the maftar while both were supervising me. Generally, when Reb Chaim caught a mistake, he would take Reb Simcha Zelik and ask whether or not it was a mistake. Reb Simcha Zelik would shake his head affirmatively, and the Balkore would repeat it. So you see, the Rav boasting publicly, they called me up, Reb Chaim on my right, Reb Simcha Zelik on my left, and they didn't catch me. And boy, was he proud. Now, at the Yachei Kala, he told another story. And again, it's a living world. You don't know who Reb Simcha Zelik Rieger was. First of all, you should know he was Brisk Dayan. He was new Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch by heart. You should also know he was born before Matan Torah. Do you know what I'm talking about? Shleimele, do you know what I'm talking about? Born before Matan Torah. Why don't you guys take off 49 years and listen to YU Torah? I have on the 1700 shirm, listen to me, listen to Reb Hirsch, whatever, all right? But I know what I've said. Listen, who revolutionized? Did you learn in Volozhin? Shleimelu, were you ever there? I learned in Volozhin, I was there, as you will see in the Monday class about a year from now. Reb Chaim revolutionized the approach to learning. Reb Chaim's derech, shnei dinim, gavra, chefzer, all that goes with it. How many times have I lectured on Reb Chaim? His innovations. Reb Simcha, that was called Matan Torah. A new Torah was given. Reb Simcha Zelik learned in Volozhin before Reb Chaim. He was older. He wasn't influenced by Reb Chaim. He was the old type of posek, baki in all of Sakharacha. Reb Chaim totally was someich on Reb Simcha Zelik. He was killed by Hitler. He was well into his 80s. Killed by Hitler in 1942. Breaks the heart.
So he was younger than
Reb Chaim. One second. His years, I'll tell you in a second. Reb Simcha Zelik, 1864 to 1942. So, one second. And Reb Chaim, when was Reb Chaim born?
Oh.
Chaim was in his 20s. In the they're about the same age, I would imagine. Look up. But he learned in Volozhin before Reb Chaim's derech conquered it. Look up Reb Chaim's years. I knew it by heart. He died in 1917, right? Do you get Reb Chaim's years?
He was born in
1853
and died in 1918.
1918, okay. Not 1917, 1918. Right after Milchama Rishona. Okay. So he was older than Reb Simcha Zelik, but Reb Simcha Zelik mastered Volozhin. He's the old type of posek. Wow, Reb Chaim was totally samach on him. Killed by Hitler, 1942. Reb Simcha Zelik told me that once he was in Warsaw, Reb Chaim, it was a Monday, and they walked into a Hasidish shtibel to hear the reading of the Torah. The Litvish shtibel were already finished davening since they prayed on time, but the Hasidish shtibel would pray at a later hour. Reb Chaim told Reb Simcha Zelik that when they opened the Torah scroll, he should
stand there and jump and start reading immediately. That way Reb Chaim could hear the Torah reading in the Lithuanian accent he was accustomed to and not the Polish dialogue of the Hasidim. Reb Simcha Zelig tried, but the Gabayim pushed him away and insisted that their regular Balei Koreh read from the Torah. You have that? You understand what I'm talking about? Reb Chaim and the Rav there, and Reb Chaim and Reb Simcha Zelig are in Warsaw, and in Warsaw, the davening that they had to go to, they were stuck because it was late in the day, and they missed the early Litvish Minyan, and the Hasidim davened later. So they went to the Hasidic minions, a Polish minion with a Polish accent, with a Polish Kriyas HaTorah, and Reb Chaim told Reb Simcha Zelig, the minute they opened the Torah, jump up and start reading. You're the Baal Koreh. The Gabayim would have nothing of it. Who's Reb Chaim? Who's Reb Simcha Zelig? Pushed them away. And they read the Torah. Now, I have to tell you, Reb Simcha Zelig, there's a number of volumes, Eila Eskara. Do you know about those volumes? It's about Gedolei Rabbanim and Gedolei Balabatim, mainly Rabbanim, who were killed by Hitler. There's a beautiful essay there on Reb Simcha Zelig Riga. His son, Reb Moshe Aaron Riga, taught in the Teachers Institute in Yeshiva University. I write about his son in Revel. His son already was a maskil, but was frum. But Rabbi Revel was very hesitant to hire him to teach at the yeshiva because he was worried he was more maskil than frum. But when he saw Hitaka was frum, he became a devoted faculty member during the Revel period and into the early Belkin period, maybe not the entire Belkin period, because when we came in Aliyah, I don't recall if he was living here or he came shortly thereafter. Reb Simcha Zelig Riga's son, Reb Moshe Aaron Riga, had two children that I know of. One is a lady, and she became a professor, and she's Taka Frum, and wrote about her father, wrote a memoir, and a son named after the grandfather, Simcha Zelig Riga. And boy, have I had Akmas Nefesh through the many years I've lived in Israel. He became a basketball coach he lived in Petah Tikva, if I'm not mistaken, and he wasn't exactly a tzaddik, I'll put it that way. And every time I would hear the name Simcha Zelig Riga on the radio, and Shabbos didn't count, and this didn't count, and later he was very ill a few years ago and recovered, and they did an interview with him and what he boasts about. And boy, was it depressing. The same name, Simcha Zelig Riga. I would hear the name, I would sit there, I would shake. But that's life. I hope that maybe the grandson left children and great-grandchildren, and in other words, great-great-grandchildren of the original. And boy, I hope some of them discovered their roots, the blood in their veins, and they came back b'lev v'nefesh. All right, that's a reflection of modern life today. And that's why I said it this morning, I've said it many times, don't be angry at the Haredi world. There's a lot of hatred and enmity that's come to the fore with this Walder issue. But the Haredim are frightened. They've seen what happened to those of us who came out of the ghetto and live in the big world. And they're frightened. How do we handle it? How do we succeed? How can we have some guarantee that our children will follow in our footpaths? And we who have successfully navigated the world outside the ghetto, We have an obligation to be role models, to be tzaddikim, to be chassidim, to be bekiyim and shasim paiskim, and at the same time to live in dignity in the Western world. And that was the Rav. I told you 1,000 times over, I defined the Rav for Ami magazine, and boy, they loved it. The Rav was a giant of Torah, a giant of brisk, but he also lived in the Western world. There was no contradiction. Baruch Hashem. All right, to reiterate, it's not an earth-shaking problem, but it's a very fascinating tshuva. It begins with the Israeli army, and I absolutely agree with the psak that Reb Menashe Klein is correct, not Reb Moshe, on this issue. You don't always have a good Bal Koreh, Latchila, if you don't have someone who can really lay properly, have someone stand next to him and unterlay and unterfear him, lead him with the laning, with the trup. If he can't do that, then the individual himself can look back and forth, look into Chumash, look into the Sefer Torah, and this is the way Rav Menashe Klein layened evidently every Shabbat in Borough Park. And I thank the individual who was listening to the Shiurim and sent me ear witness account that he's a Talmud of Rav Menashe Klein, and this is the way he layened. It's interesting that Rav Moshe doesn't quote the Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Brura, typical Lithuanian to a certain degree, and it's fascinating that Rav Menashe Klein quotes what he saw by tzaddikim in the earlier generation who did exactly what Rav Moshe found fault with. My dear students, I added an addendum on the Rav, where the Rav is boasting with that Rav Chaim, Rav Simcha Zelig, didn't catch him. He was perfect in laning. And by the way, the Rav was a fabulous Bal Koreh. He had a Goynish cup, and he was a fabulous Bal Koreh. This sets the stage for next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, when we come into the big leagues, return to Yoredeya, return to the Israeli-American scene. Who do you give stucca to? What do you require for the person putting out his hand to prove that it's a valid cause? And I'll introduce it with the State of Israel and America and the interaction and what I've seen not always making me happy. And then we'll start to understand the Shaila and Reb Menashe Klein. This is the big leagues already, as you will see. Now, tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, I pick up exactly where I left off, a little bit more information on Kastner and the Satmaruv coming to America, and we're going to live with him as he arrives, walk the streets of Williamsburg, Terev Adas, try to see how he came, how many followers, and how it blossomed. And then we'll see the interaction of the old-time frum Jews who suddenly are being blown away by a new world. And fascinating. How do we get to this Natan memoir literature? It brings the history, Torah history, back to life. Are there any questions? I want to thank the brave individuals who came out of their homes and came to class. It is greatly appreciated. Ain't a doma shmiel aria, ain't a doma to. That's what they tell me. They're staying up all night in America because ain't a doma shmiel aria, ain't a doma shmiel to teaching by Zoom to have Talmidim in front of you. Okay, open it up until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya, open it up to the world.
Okay. Rabbi?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, waiting for the Rav was not easy. He would lay it as loud as I was reading, which made it very hard to concentrate, but it was assumed he would do it that way.
Oh, no.
Unfortunately, there are Gabbayim who correct where they shouldn't and don't where they should. For I mean, Well, Mishnah Berurah holds, by the way, machzirin also on truck when the inyan is mishtana al yedezeh.
Right.
I think it's in Kukman Beis.
Okay.
And as examples, l'chadchila machzirin also on truck between a machzik and a misharis, which would mean even between a bashta and a kadma. But unfortunately, most yeshivos don't even teach that. When I taught Diptik at YU, I made sure to mention things like that, but people don't know it. So they don't know, they don't understand the difference. When they say Matzik Mishares, I made sure to do the Rashis and the Mishnah Berurahs that others skip. But as an example of a case with a Gabbai, although this is a case of a Gabbai who didn't know, and I wouldn't fault him for it, someone was laning once. I was in a minyan. It was in Re'e on the Pasuk Va'achalta Shem Ufnei Hashem Elokecha. And he said Va'achalta Shem. And the Gabbai had him go back. Now, again, it was a split-second decision. I would not fault the Gabbai. The Gabbai didn't know. But only because I knew that the Gabbai would want to know, I wouldn't say it in front of others, but I took him aside after and told him in that case he didn't have to go back. The reason that it's Mil'el is not because it's about Hamakeret. Excuse me, the reason that it's that he said it V'achal Tasham, which would be only future tense. The reason that it was Mil'el is not because it wasn't about Hamakeret. It was, but it was Nasa Bechar. Even though if you look at Sefer Dikduk, they will tell you in many cases you will never get nasogachar onto a havaras skura, onto a closed syllable. This is a perfect case where you do.
I
wouldn't fault him for doing it, but in that case he didn't have to go back because there's no havamina that what he said could mean anything than what it was supposed to mean.
I just want to come back to your first comment about the Rav. And quote to you the Rav when we're learning Hilchot Kriyat HaTorah. So the Rav held, of course, that the person who's Ole La Torah has to read from the Torah, like the original Takana. And nevertheless, you don't want to disturb the Baal Koreh. And the Rav broke into a smile and laughter and said, yes, I know that I disturbed the Baal Koreh. I read it a little too loud. So that confirms just what you said. But all right, what you described is lachatchila. All I can say is I am not qualified to be a Baal Koreh. Now, hearing what you said, I want to state I'm not qualified to be a Baal Koreh to the second power. I'll put it that way.
It took a lot of concentration to be able to do it.
All right.
It was possible to do, but it took a lot of... I've heard stories where... As I say, were they correct? I've heard people say Vayyancha, Vayarivacha instead of Vayyancha. So it's Kal instead of Piel. It's a big difference in the meaning.
Uh-huh.
He answered you instead of he tortured you or he inflicted you.
Right, no, I understand.
I've heard a couple of other things like Habatzar Adeno Ben Shneihem instead of Shineihem, things like that. But the one that really takes the cake. And I had a witness to it. People wouldn't even believe it. Shirat Hayam, Shirat Vara, or Luvena, Agabe Hatsi Luvena. Shirat David and Shirat Hazinu is Luvena, Agabe Luvena. Someone was laning Ha'azinu. And something sounded very off. He was going so quickly and so low that it was hard to tell, but I realized he was laning down the column.
He was laning down?
The column instead of across.
Oh my gosh, okay.
And they actually did not have him go back all the way.
And they didn't correct him?
Well, they didn't have him go back all the way.
Wow. Okay, are there any?
Actually happened. And I mean, I realized he's laying down the column. I wasn't the Gabbai. I wasn't the one in charge. I did say a little something there.
But they
didn't have him go back home.
Yeah, but that way you're not Yotze for sure. That's not even a Shaila. It's possible.
But when you said that Berkat Kohanim versus Kriyas HaTorah, Kriyas HaTorah in almost all cases is Drabbaner. There is a shita that for Katwan it was only go right down the Mikdash. But aside from that shita, it might be go right down when you have three.
I don't understand what you're saying.
In other words, Birkat Kohanim could be Doraita outside the Mikdash, according to some Shita, as long as you have two Kohanim. The Torah is always Drabbanan, except in rare cases.
What I meant to say, I think it's understood, is that Kriyat Torah is a very firm takana. Birchat Kohanim, I don't have to tell you where in Israel, in Jerusalem, in Petach Tikva, we do Birchat Kohanim every day. Everywhere else in the world, it's limited to Yontif. And then you have the whole problem of Yontif Shenafal B'Shabbat, which we've spoken about many times. Okay. Is there anyone else who has a comment?
Yeah.
Wait, we can't hear you. Nachum, we can't hear you.
Talking about slavery in America. So I remember I had an elementary teacher, Rebbe, who said that he knew a man, a black American, you know, from way back, who had a shtar. He was a religious Jew, and he had the shtar that his great-grandfather had gotten when he had been freed, and they made him a Jew. You know, that he had been, I guess when he had been born a Jew in the South, they gave him a mila. And you know, an Ebed Kanani, and then at the end of the Civil War, everybody had to be slaves. So he freed him, he became Jewish, and to that day, after four generations, his descendants are still religious Jews because they had been freed by Jews.
That's what I'm looking for. If there was ever a practice, if we have any record of that, they treated them with the Gerut L'Shem Avdut, a Shivchut. Very fascinating.
Probably most didn't, but there were probably one or two from Jews who
That's very fascinating. I wonder if a computer search will turn up any sources.
In New York, they have these shuls that they're called Ethiopian, I think they call themselves, but they're black Americans who are Jewish, and they seem to be kind of from, sort of, and some of them claim that they're descendants from these
interesting. I had a black student in America in the 60s, David Doray. And I believe his father was a rav in one of these kehillot. And he was a wonderful student. If anyone knows where David Doray is today, I'd be very happy to know how his life worked out. My students in the 60s are older than me today. They're all retired. Halavai, they should all be alive. That's a different side of the coin. But okay, we have to sign
on. I can tell you one story in reverse, quickly. Benny Maziz was once speaking, I believe it was in NYU, he was a POW during Mohammed Yom HaKippurim.
Which Maziz are you talking about? The Supreme Court Justice?
I don't remember. I know that he became something else after, I'm not sure. But I remember he was a POW during Mohammed Yom HaKippurim and for a while after. And he said at one point, the Syrian soldiers took their boots off. I think they were either tied up and couldn't do it themselves, whatever. He took the boots off and he had Kavana to be Kona, the Syrian soldier, as an Ebed Kenani.
What? Took his boots off and Kavana? Okay. I wonder what mezuz that is, because the one who became a Supreme Court Justice threw away Kol HaTorah Kula. It's beyond comprehension here. Agudat Yisrael Chinuch Atzma'i. His cousin is the famous Rav Mezuz, the Rosh Yeshiva. I believe it's his cousin, not it's his uncle, but it's the same family. And what he became, I don't even want to repeat what I know. I hope he'll become a Baal Tshuva today. That's all I can say. He's retired. He left the Supreme Court in anger, it seems. He resigned years before he had to retire, and whatever he is, wherever he is today, I don't know. But if that's the mezuz, it'd be very strange, the story you're telling. It sounds.
You could find out if you know that he was taken captive during the war.
All right,
that
has to be. I don't believe so. I never heard that about him. But all right, it has to be checked.
I remember him saying they were there over Pesach and for Moror, they had a bittersweet chocolate bar that they used.
I'm happy to hear that he cared about Pesach HaMerah, but maybe at that point he was still within. But wow. Okay, until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya, thank you very, very much for honoring me with your presence. Kol Tuv Sela. And I want to thank Mark, who took over today. Yomo is dealing with the Misrat HaPnim, and Mark did a beautiful job. L'kavod u'l'tiferet. Thank you.